Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli, and I am six, so just bear with me.
Starting out of the gate. Yes. So as you probably realize, if you're subscribed, is that we didn't have an episode last week. And
I actually sound better this week than I did last week.
Yes, you do. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this if you didn't sound a little better. Everybody caught the crud at camp. Except for me, knock on wood. Oh, please, God. I don't have time to get sick. Oh, man. The big kids came back from camp with sniffles, and then it spread to you.
I was the one who got sick first. I came back from camp with sniffles.
Right. So to back up things a bit, the kids, the older four kids went to scout camp, and then that was a whole week from Saturday to Saturday. We mentioned that the last time we had an episode. And then on that Monday of that week, you and Lucy went for a day.
Yeah, an overnight.
An overnight. Yeah, that's what I mean. So you went Monday, came back on Tuesday. How'd that go?
It was really fun. I had a blast. Lucy had a blast. She wanted to stay the whole week. And we got a really good sense from the inside of like what camp life and culture were like, which was awesome. And we got to do lots and lots of activities. And I walked. Between the 2 days, I walked 20,000 steps.
That's a lot.
Which is, I was tired.
Those aren't 2 full days. And a lot of that is up and down a hill to the waterfront.
Yeah, there was just a lot of walking. Like our campsite was at the very far end of camp from everything.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was fun. It was good to get to know some of the other parents a little bit better and to spend time with Lucy.
Our girls were the only two from their troop who went and the only two BSA girls that were there. There were some older.
There were some female venture scouts who were on staff, but they weren't campers.
Right. And so Bella and Sophie were like together by themselves over by where the adult staff sites were, just as a safety oversight thing, which was good. It worked out. It wasn't perfect. They had some struggles. There were some struggles this year. It was Anthony's first camp. I think it went pretty well.
Yeah.
I think he had a lot of fun. He earned a whole bunch of merit badges that he liked. And so, yeah. And then Ben did a wilderness survival merit badge.
Wilderness survival.
Preparedness survival. I forget what it is.
It's survival.
Yep.
Which includes building a shelter and spending the night in it.
Very proud of him that he did that. The other boys didn't, but he did. And so that's something. I'm proud that he stuck it out and did it. So that was good. So so that was camp. And then you and Lucy came back and we had a fun, like kind of a weird week of just the two of us and her. It was
the first couple of days, like the second day we came back, I was feeling not so great. Then the next day I spent the day cleaning up the living room. And then the next day I was flat out completely
sick.
Yeah. So my plan for getting lots and lots of cleaning done didn't happen because I picked up a bug at camp.
Right.
So best laid plans of mice and men, et cetera.
Right.
Instead, I did a lot of binge watching TV. And, we also didn't have AC.
Right. I was going to talk about that.
Yeah. Which made things even more miserable because I was sick and hot.
So here's the short version of it. The AC has been making the blower in the attic has been making noise. We have central AC. Blower in the attic has been making noise for months. And then with a few weeks ago before camp, it would do this thing where it would be running and running, and then it would turn off because it had hit temp, but then the compressor would come on again, but the blower wouldn't. And then I'd turn off the everything at the circuit breakers, I'd turn them off, leave it that way for hours, come back, turn it on, it would start again, be fine. We had three different repairmen out. Each one said they fixed it. The first two were wrong.
They didn't fix it.
Yeah. The first guy was like, the problem was when the first guy came, it was working. So he has to just go off of what we can tell him. And then he said, well, if it happens again, it's probably electrical. So have them send the electrician. So it happened again. They sent the electrician. He came, he did his thing, and he said, it's the thermostat. We had a Nest, one of those Nest thermostats, the smart thermostats. And he's like, there's something wrong with it, because when I take it out of the circuit, everything works. When I put it back in the circuit, everything doesn't. So I run to Home Depot, buy another Nest thermostat, a cheaper one that doesn't do as much. We throw it in there. It works for a while, and then it doesn't. And so finally, and this is all taking place over the course of several weeks, you know, with everything going on with camp and work and stuff, just scheduling a guy to come in and do the stuff. So finally we get the third guy, and he's here. He's like, what's going on? All right. So it's making this noise when we turn it on. He's like, what's it sound like? And I had just turned the whole system back on again, and it went like this loud noise from the blower motor. I'm like, that's the noise. He knew what it was. He took the blower motor out, took it back to the shop. They rebuilt the motor, brought it back the next day, put it in. It works. Hallelujah.
Finally.
In the past year, we have had major work done on all of the major systems in our house. The structural, the plumbing, the electrical, and now the air conditioning. Which includes the heat. So the house should not have a problem with the heat, please. We've already done that. Is there anything we haven't worked on?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Anyway, it works. It works well. And that was when we got hit by the heat wave that everyone else had been having all summer. So, you know, it was 90s plus and all that nonsense. But thank God. Thank God for AC. A real blessing. And for solar power to pay for it, to generate the electricity for it. So that's what's been going on. I think, yeah.
Yeah, and so through this week,
lots of doctor's appointments.
Every single kid has now come down sick. I've been to the urgent care twice. I've taken kids to urgent care, kids to urgent care. It's been, and this past week, I had an appointment like every single day. Like the kids had telehealth appointments, which fortunately
pre-scheduled ones that didn't have to do with this.
Right. Yeah. Fortunately, didn't have to be canceled.
Yeah. Telehealth is awesome.
Because like I sounded awful and the doctors were very apologetic about how awful I sounded, but they were able to like actually have their appointments anyway.
If these were in-person appointments, we would have had to recancel and reschedule, and that would be such a hassle.
Especially since like one of the doctors is scheduling into November right now. So
right. Even I had an unexpected doctor's appointment. I've been having trouble with my thumb, you know, I've got an inflamed tendon or something in my hand, and I went to see my doctor, and she's going to get me into an orthopedist and we'll check it out. But just like
it's been the week of appointments.
It has been. Yeah, it's been crazy. So let's talk about some food things. Last time we were here, we talked about I was going to make sausage, gravy, and biscuits. I have done that.
It was good.
It was pretty good. I worked off a couple different recipes. Sausage, gravy, and biscuits is pretty straightforward. Not a whole lot going on there. One is from a website, tastebetterfromscratch.com. The other was from a YouTube channel called Smoking and Grilling with AB. This guy he's more smoking and grilling but he does have like other like kitchen recipes, and he's all about like simplifying stuff. And so he gave this pretty good straightforward recipe. Like he starts with the Pillsbury Grand biscuits, you know, just like, and I started with that. I wanted to kind of focus more on the gravy than the biscuit for the first time I do this. So, and the biscuit's actually pretty good, I have to say.
Pillsbury makes some pretty decent biscuits.
It's not your grandma's, you know, buttermilk biscuit, but it's a decent biscuit. So And I doctored up the gravy a little bit, you know, a little bit of onion, throw a little bit of extra this and that in there, made sure there was some sage. Actually, it was the only sausage they had at the store when I went was sage, you know, Jimmy Dean's sage sausage. So that already had sage in it, so I didn't have to add it. But yeah, it was pretty good. It got a little thick. I would have liked to have had a little thinner, but yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I have to say I was sick and I just ate my biscuits with honey, which is the way I like them.
Yep.
So, oh, well.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we've made some other things, but we'll talk about those later. We got a lot of stuff we wanted to talk about in because we've been reading and watching a lot over the past couple of weeks. And we want to share that with you. I want to mention that I watched the first episode of House of the Dragon. This is the Game of Thrones prequel that's on HBO. Starring Matt Smith, by the way, isn't it?
Okay.
Who, as a horrible, terrible person. So it's kind of weird. It's very Game of Thrones. It's, I don't know. People have been raving about it. I kind of felt like it was the same ground we covered in Game of Thrones. I didn't feel like there was anything really new about it yet. It's only the first episode, so we'll see what goes on. It's typical Game of Thrones, brutally violent at times and brutally explicit at other times. Unnecessarily so. I've heard stories about how the showrunners, and it's different showrunners on this than there were on Game of Thrones, but the showrunners, you know, have this mandate to make sure there's plenty of titillating content in it. And it's like, is that necessary? I don't know if I'm going to keep watching. I might watch one more just to see if it gets any more interesting. It's got dragons. I love dragons. I've always loved dragons since I was a kid. And so the dragons are cool, but I don't know if it's worthwhile. So then we watched the first two episodes of She-Hulk, the new Marvel series on Disney Plus.
Yep.
Generally, we have positive views of that, right?
I enjoyed the first episode. The second episode was slightly disappointing, especially in that it was really short.
It was 20 minutes long. It was like a long YouTube video.
So that was unexpected and a little disappointing, but I'm hopeful. I mean, I liked the premise of the show. I like the actress, and
it comes across as kind of an action sitcom.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the kind of the general premise, the general feel to it.
Yeah, it's more sitcom-y.
Funny situations. Written with punchlines per se. No.
But it's less like drama and more like played for laughs.
Yeah. There's a lot of characters who are sort of stereotypes and kind of flat. A lot of the secondary characters are kind of flat. Her dad, who is one of the brother, the two guys from Perfect Strangers, that 80s sitcom, you know, Balky and, well, I remembered his name before, but now I don't remember it. He's the other brother, the not Balky brother, who looks so much older because of course he does. He's 30 years older. But you know, the lame, awkward uncle and the never do well cousin at dinner, and
the family felt really flat and stereotypical. What I really liked about the first episode, honestly, was her relationship with Bruce, because the main character is Bruce Banner's cousin,
right,
Jen, and I liked their relationship. It was fun. It was interesting. It was a different take on the Hulk, and
Because Bruce, all he, like, he's trying to help her, like, how to be a Hulk, but all he knows is his own experience.
So he sort of universalizes his own experience and assumes that her path is going to mirror his, but she's not the same sort of person, and she's got, like, very different life experience, and that changes how she experiences being a Hulk. I liked that a lot.
Yeah. That was good. The second episode, there's sort of like it kind of transitions to like workplace comedy thing. Like we talked about a little bit of the stereotypes, like the stereotypical boss and the stereotypical, I don't know. I kind of like the idea of in a world with superheroes, you'd have these big law firms would have parts of their firm focusing on superhero law.
I also like the idea that, like, just because you get superpowers doesn't mean you want to be a superhero. And what do you do with a superhero who doesn't really want to give up their career and their life to go join the Avengers?
Like, everyone just basically assumes you've got superpowers. You want to be a superhero.
You're going to be an Avenger now. And she's like, I don't want to be an Avenger. I am a lawyer and I worked very hard for my law degree and I enjoy practicing law. I don't want to stop.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting perspective because it's different. And I like that. Yeah.
And hopefully they will continue to do something interesting with it.
I heard something kind of interesting is the whole backstory of how she became a Hulk was supposed to be like in episode 8, not like it was supposed to be like she's the Hulk. She's She-Hulk from the beginning and all that lawyer stuff happens. And then later on in episode 8, we do the backstory of how she got that way.
So they changed
it, which I think was for the better because I felt like it would have been weird. But that whole thing, like where it starts, the first episode, she's in her office at the DA. She's in the DA's office. And then there's sort of a stop. She turns. She breaks the fourth wall. That's kind of a She-Hulk thing from the comics. And so, oh, you're wondering how I got this way? Well, here it is. And that's all like they did that like 3 months ago. That whole thing. I mean, all of the shooting had been done, like all of the footage had been shot, but the special effects of that transition, like that whole how she ended up first changing, that was done really recently. And so they ended up having to do that a lot in like reflections in things and stuff, which worked better.
I wonder if maybe the choppiness of the second episode was because they were re-scrambling the storyline.
It could be that they maybe had to take stuff out of the second story that wasn't done yet and move it to the third episode or something along those lines.
Maybe that explains it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so we've only watched 2 episodes. It'll be interesting to see how it goes, whether the promise gets fulfilled. I'm not gonna say whether it gets better because it's good.
Right.
But there was a bit of clunkiness in the second episode. So we'll see if it retains the promise of the first episode.
Ironically, one of the things that I binged watched while I was sick was also a legal
drama. Yeah. Comedy drama, right?
Yeah. Kind of more drama than comedy, although there were definitely some comedic moments. It's actually a Korean show. Which a friend of mine, no, which my sister found on Netflix. Who knew that Netflix had lots of Korean. Lots and lots of Korean
Squid content. Game? You and I have not watched Squid Game, but no. It was like one of the biggest things last year.
Anyway.
But it's called?
It's called Extraordinary Attorney Woo. And the premise is a young attorney right out of law school who has autism or who's autistic. And she been raised by a single dad, and she gets scooped up by one of the two biggest law firms in Seoul. And her sort of navigating the world of high-powered law firm while being a person with autism is really fascinating. I loved the way they dealt with her. Like, she basically has two special interests: the law, which she started reading her dad's law books when she was like 5. And the first sentence out of her mouth, like she was nonverbal until the very first thing that she said was like quoting from one of her dad's law books. And then whales. She has an obsession with whales, and they do really cute things where like whales will suddenly swim like through the background of the scene. Kind of reminds me of Miss Marvel, where you see
graffiti animated and that sort
animated
of stuff.
Graffiti and stuff. But for here it's whales. And so one of her struggles is to not talk inappropriately about whales at work because she just loves whales and wants to spout information encyclopedically about whales. But a lot of really good drama. And I just found it was incredibly fascinating. The characters were all really well-rounded and interesting, and getting insight into like Korean culture via different lawsuits that she's involved in was kind of fascinating. Like Korean law, a lot of it looks very Western. Like the way that the courtroom procedures happen it's all very Western.
Probably post Korean War.
Right. Yeah. But then when they dig into some of the precedents or the legal theory, some of it gets very Korean very quickly. And that was kind of interesting. And there's like a scene where they go to a Buddhist temple and all the lawyers are like roped into praying with the monks, except for the one lawyer who refuses to bow. And he says, and one of the lawyers says, like, why aren't you bowing? He's like, oh, I'm Catholic. And she's like, oh, I'm Catholic too. And he's like, oh yeah, what's your baptism name? And she gives him like a pop star like name. And he's like, yeah, that's not a Christian name. Keep on bowing. So lots of really interesting plots. Like it's very episodic because each episode focuses on, you know, one particular legal case.
So it's basically a legal procedural.
It's a legal procedural, but with a really strong through arc about like
about her.
Yeah. She's kind of got a romantic relationship going on with a paralegal in the firm, and there's another lawyer who's also interested in him, so there's lots of relationship drama. There's also her family backstory comes in, like her dad becomes a really important character and his experience being a single father raising an autistic child and like some of his loneliness and some of his sacrifices he's made for her. And it was just really, really good. A lot of family stories. In one of the cases she prosecutes is actually about a autistic boy, young man who is much more severely autistic than she is, who's accused of killing his brother.
Oh, wow.
And so then you get to sort of see from her point of view, like, okay, I'm autistic and he's autistic, but my experience of autism is nothing like his. And her attempts to relate to him, like everyone assumes that she's going to be able to relate to him because, well, you're autistic too. And she's like, I don't know how to talk to him.
Right.
Except then, in fact, she ends up actually making a connection with him. But it's really interesting to see levels of connection, misunderstandings. I mean, they use the autism in a ways to like you often with sitcom situational comedies and dramas, you have miscommunications. Well, there's lots of chances of miscommunication. It was just a really good. I watched all of 16 episodes of the first season and loved it. And supposedly they're coming out with season 2 next year. So
cool. I've heard there's a lot of really good Korean.
Well, now TV. That I've watched one Korean TV show, Netflix is giving me all the recommendations for all the Korean shows that they've and movies that they've got.
Okay.
Some of them look kind of interesting.
I want to take a little tangent right here to talk about the trap, the algorithm trap.
Uh-huh.
The algorithms, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or Netflix, punish curiosity. If I see something in my feed and it's like, I'm curious about it. I'm not interested in that topic as like a deep dive. I'm just like, what's this? And I click on it. And then they show me that as if I am autistic and obsessed with that particular topic. Oh, it drives me crazy. And so I actively avoid clicking on things that I'm curious about.
Well, see, my response was the opposite. In terms of, I would like to see much more diverse content in Netflix's recommendations for me, but they tend to only show me things that are very similar to what I've watched or what everyone's watching. And I'm like,
I think that's the same thing, though.
But it's sort of, but I'm saying the flip side of it is that it's really hard to find new content except for word of mouth by people off the platform because the platform's recommendation algorithms are kind of limited. They're stupid,
right? It's based on what you've already watched, but like
I don't necessarily want to watch more of what I've already seen. I want to watch new, different kinds of things that are different from what I've seen.
So not necessarily things I've clicked on out of curiosity, but also not necessarily the sorts of things I enjoy but have watched a lot of. I want maybe something new from you. Yeah, YouTube is the same way. I mean, YouTube does a little better at showing things that are a little bit out of the standard. Okay, it looks like you're starting to reach your limits in your voice. So let me finish up some this. We'll wrap things up as a shorter episode. I want to talk about a book I finished called. Well, I want to talk about a TV show I watched because I actually want to talk about this called The Offer on Paramount Plus, and it's a dramatization of how The Godfather was made, and it is really good. It's
fiction or non-fiction?
It's fiction. It's fiction about the making of The Godfather.
Okay. I thought it was a documentary from what you were telling me about it.
Oh, no, 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 no. This is definitely, I mean, it's based on the real experiences of the producer, Al Ruddy, who I'd never heard of before, which is kind of funny, because this portrays him as the keystone for The Godfather. Without him, it would never have been made. Him pushing it from against all comers. The studio, the mafia didn't want it made. Frank Sinatra didn't want it made, which is the same as the mafia. You know, like everybody didn't want to make this movie, and he made this movie happen against all odds. And there's some really great performances in it. The guy who plays Francis Ford Coppola is really good. I mean, they're all really good. So Al Ruddy is played by Miles Teller, who is a younger actor. He was in the latest Top Gun movie. I haven't seen him in a lot of things, but based on this, he's really good. I'm really impressed. His secretary is Betty, executive assistant, however you want to call it, I forget her name now. The actress from Ted Lasso, who is the girlfriend of the soccer player. I'm going to just bring up the offer here. She is so good and so different from the character in Ted Lasso. For one thing, she's doing an American accent. There's a lot of non-Americans in this doing American accents, which is funny. But her name is, Juno Temple. She should be higher up in the ranks because she's much more important. Bern Gorman plays Charlie Bluthorn, who's the CEO of Gulf and Western, which owned Paramount. Gulf and Western was a conglomerate company. It had all kinds of businesses and happened to own a movie studio. And that causes problems because they're not in the movie studio magic business. They're in the movie money business. And you have Robert Evans is played by Matthew Good, who for some reason has this nasal accent the entire time. But he's the head of Paramount. Really good, really good. And you have like a lot of these actors playing actors. You have like the guy playing Al Pacino. So he's doing the whole Al Pacino voice and the hunch and the kind of mannerisms. And you have the Marlon Brando character. So I got to say, it was really good. I've watched 9 of the 10 episodes so far. I'm going to be talking about this at length on Secrets of Movies and TV Shows with Mike Creevy and Andrew Hermes. The three of us have already on that podcast talked about the 3 Godfather movies. So this will be a nice coda on that. So it'll be kind of fun to talk about it, but that's a lot of fun. Then today you and I with the kids, we watched Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings.
I love Shang-Chi. It's such a good movie.
It continues to be very good. Awkwafina, who plays Katie,
I love her.
She's so good. She's very fun. Very funny. She is, we realize there's, in almost all the Marvel movies, there is the normal sidekick, the normal person who's the sidekick to the hero.
Who's kind of the stand-in for the audience who's like, I'm normal and I'm not quite sure what's going on and I'm just along for the ride.
Right. You got Peter Parker's friend Ned. You get Darcy in the Thor movies. You've got, I'm trying to think of Luis in Ant-Man. Pepper Potts, I suppose, or Happy in Iron Man. Happy is kind of, yeah. Who would be in Captain America? Would it be Bucky? I mean, Bucky isn't in there very often.
No.
Or is it, what's her name? Carter.
No, I don't think Captain America has a similar character.
No.
The audience stand in. No.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. It's got a different dynamic.
It does. So anyway, and neither does Guardians of the Galaxy.
No, Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, in Guardians, it's really almost...
It's an ensemble cast, so...
No, but...
Star-Lord?
Star-Lord himself is sort of the, like...
The audience.
The audience goofball human trapped among aliens.
That's true, yeah. Anyway, Shang-Chi, really good movie. I don't know, it hits a lot of good notes in there. I mean, Michelle Yeoh is great in everything. I mean, I love her in everything she does. The wufu style kung fu is just really, you know, top notch. The story, I like the story.
It's another story about
family.
Family, yeah.
Yeah, A lot of Marvel.
Family and about grief and the ways that grief like wrecks you and traumatizes you and grief unresolved, like how it really breaks things. I mean, in a way, it's an Shang-Chi's dad's grief is very parallel to Wanda's grief in WandaVision and the way it's so destructive of everything around him.
Right.
Kind of interesting to see those parallels there.
That's true.
I also really loved somebody comes back, return of Trevor.
Oh, yes.
Who played the Mandarin in the Iron Man movie.
Right.
Iron Man 3. He's hilarious.
Yes. What a funny character. Like when he's playing dead.
Ben Kingsley. He's just awesome.
He's got a great comic a turn every once in a while. He's really a good comic actor. And we realized in She-Hulk, one of the people she has to represent is a character named the Abomination, which the Hulk fought in the original Hulk movie. The one
I never saw.
The one you never saw. It's sort of even before Iron Man, even before there was an MCU, it was the, Fight Club guy.
Edward Norton,
when he played the Hulk. The big baddie in that was the Abomination. Well, we realized as we watched Shang-Chi that there's a scene from She-Hulk where he escaped from prison, the Abomination, to fight in a pit. And we realized, oh, that was in Shang-Chi, that scene. So we actually saw the scene again and totally forgot about it. So it's kind of funny. So that's what we've been watching. I also finished a book. Yay. This one was called The Nova Incident from the Galactic Cold War series by Dan Morin. It's a really great sci-fi series. That's sort of a mashup of like science fiction and spy novel. And it takes place 400 or 500 years in the future. Dan is a tech writer, like a technology writer. He's I kind of knew him first from his writing in Macworld and other Mac places. So he knows his tech really well. And so it really integrates well into the story and really good plotting, character development, funny characters, serious characters, and there's an arc that's developing over the course of the series that is really good. So, I recommend it. So this one's called The Nova Incident, but I forget what the first one's called, but look for Dan Morin. I'll put links in the show notes. Good series.
Yeah. Ironically, the series that I started also had a spy novel crossed with another genre.
Right.
Except mine was spy novel crossed with vampire novel. I started Barbara Hambly's James Asher vampire novels. And James Asher, it takes place in like 1904, 1905. And he has previously been a spy, a secret agent for the British government. But he's retired and he's a Oxford lecturer. He's a philologist and studies mythology, folklore. And then he runs into vampires. And so he's kind of an interesting vampire hunter in that he's hired by the vampires to catch somebody who's killing vampires.
Huh.
And so there's some like interesting table turns. He does not want to help the vampires but they're holding threats over his wife, who is a medical doctor. And so he's got to try to catch the vampire killer before the vampires take him out and his wife.
So it's a little bit like the Dresden Files.
Kind of, yeah. Where the vampires are not, they're not good. They're not good people. But he ends up like working for them and with them. And his wife sort of is his silent partner because she can do all like the medical end of things. And Barbara Hambly's vampires, like basically they treat vampirism as a sort of virus.
Right.
Of course. So
that's one of the common.
So while it has some sort of like spiritual aspects to it, basically she ditches a lot of the vampire lore in terms of like the religion stuff for focusing on vampires being sort of allergic to silver and garlic and other plants. But she kind of ditches. They don't care about religion.
The crosses
don't bother them unless they're made out of silver.
Right.
So the first one was he's trying to catch a killer who's taking out vampires. And then the second one, you go to Constantinople on this big, like, international spy ring. There's some Austro-Hungarians who want to use vampires somehow in the spy game. And so they've coerced a vampire to try to work for them. It's very complicated. Some of my friends are very, very excited about this series. I kept reading mostly because, honestly, they said it was so good. It was not exactly what I was in the mood for. And so it was good. It was an interesting take. I didn't find it as gripping and compelling as my friends who had been urging me to read it.
Okay.
Found it. I mean, it was interesting. It's an interesting take. The characters aren't bad. I didn't find it like, I think that if my friend hadn't been raving about it, I might not have picked up the second book. She said, especially it gets really good by book like 4 or 5. And I'm like, I'm going to take a break. I might come back to it. I don't feel a great desire to speed read my way through the entire series.
Right. Though. It's not like the Dresden Files.
No, it's not as gripping to me. Although, again, like for some people, it's incredibly gripping. So I'm not sure what I'm missing. I probably need to ask them. I don't want to sound like, so,
well, sometimes the book is just not for you, you know, I mean, it's not going to grab you. So let's move on to talk about the mass readings. So because everyone was sick and, you know, when you have the plague these days, you can't go to church. So I was the only one who went to mass at church. Everyone else did the TV thing. So at our parish, though, this week, we had a Divine Word missionary come in talk. It's a Boston thing. I don't know if other dioceses do this, where they have missionaries come in on a weekend and preach at all the masses to raise support for their mission. I don't know if other dioceses do that, but ours does. And so every once in a while, you'll have one of these missionaries priests come in. And so this one is, I didn't catch his name. Loud sound system, heavy accent. Sometimes some of the proper names pass by me. But he's a Divine Word missionary, professor of theology at their seminary, which sounded like he said Iowa, but I'm not sure if it's in Iowa. But it's at their seminary. He's originally from Togo, which is in West Africa. But he told us about his time serving in the Amazon, as he said, the river, not the shopping, which was, you know, funny. He talked about his parish, which had 70 mission churches. So one parish in the city, but they had 70 individual missions that they had to serve. And they would go out on mission trips, 3-day, 7-day, and the longest ones were 15-day mission trips where they would get in a boat. The only way to get anywhere in the area was by boat. There was no driving anywhere. So you'd get in a boat and you'd travel over the course of 2 weeks hitting all these missions. And he talked about how dangerous it was. It's crocodiles, it's piranha. He said every trip we went out, we didn't know if we'd come back in the boat or in a casket, which is kind of scary to think about. And he said the 70 missions all had, based on, you know, how many times they could visit them, had 4 masses per year. So they would show up, you know, each season or say, and everyone would come out for the mass. That was the only mass they would get till for 3 months. So to sustain themselves in the interim, the people got together on Sundays and read the Bible and prayed the rosary together, which made me think about how I can understand how people, the Catholics in these areas, can be so susceptible to Protestants who show up and plant churches, because that's a lot like what Protestants do. They get together and they read the Bible and they pray, and then someone gets up and preaches, and that's a lot like, you know, that's Sunday service for them, so they don't have to miss, you know, and if they're not particularly attached to the sacraments, they get pulled away that way. He did talk about how the priests, when they get there, they didn't just celebrate Mass, and he didn't say this, but, you know, such a situation could end up having priests being like sacramental ATMs. They show up, the sacrament machines, they show up and dispense the sacraments. But the people really consciously wanted them to enter into their lives. So they would bring them there. There would be a huge celebration. They would have meals. They would talk to the priests about what's going on in the village and what's going on in their lives. And they wanted to make sure that he knew he wasn't just there to, you know, bless and press and go. You know, it was more than that. And he always he talked about how, even despite their poverty, how generous the people always were. They would always, you know, be giving them food and other things to bring back to the main parish and to support the parish. And then he talked about starting a youth music group because the young people, who especially the ones who lived in the street, all love music. So they started a group where they would teach them how to play instruments. And they weren't on the streets anymore. They supported each other. And by coming together, like through music, they all became missionaries to each other and to the neighborhoods. So we talked about that. So it was nice. It was a good. He didn't touch a lot on the gospel readings or the lectionary readings, but it was a good homily. It was very it was interesting, and it reminds us of how universal the church is and how different that experience of the church is in so many different places, and how we can take things for granted. You know, we have three masses at our parish every weekend, four, I think, even. Just in our particular parish, not in the other parishes that are 5 minute drives away or 10 minutes or 20 minutes away. So, yeah, I think we counted once there's 20 parishes within a 20 minute drive of our house on Sunday morning.
I think so.
Something along those lines. Yeah.
It's very different.
It is a very different experience. So, but I wanted to mention the first reading is from the Book of Sirach, and it starts by saying, my child, conduct your affairs with humility, and you will be loved more than a giver of gifts. And it struck me, for some reason, that to connect that with social media, when I'm on Twitter or Facebook, I've changed how I use these things over the last several years, these services, to be less bombastic. And personally, I mean, I was pretty bombastic about politics and events and putting my opinion out there. I'm much less likely to put my opinion out there about every big thing that happens, because I'm just one guy with an opinion. Like, it's not up to me to convince everybody of something. You're wrong, I'm right, you know. I've started to see other people I know and respect and how they act on social media and realize, you know, they kind of keep their opinion to themselves on a lot of things. They talk about things. They have interesting things to say. They share interesting articles or artwork, like John Herod, our friend, who shares amazing art that he finds. So I started like doing more about sharing interesting articles I find and trying to have conversations about things, books and movies and TV shows and that sort of stuff, and kind of get away from opining about all of the nonsense in the world. There's plenty of people doing that. No one needs to hear my voice, but I like this verse: conduct your affairs with humility and you'll be loved more than a giver of gifts. And you know what? People love someone who's humble. You know, people respect someone who's humble. I heard a story a long time ago about this bishop who was humble, that he would show up to these events, like dinners given in his honor, and he would sit like in the crowd, and they're like, no, your grace, your eminence or whatever, come up here. You're supposed to sit up here. You know, this is your seat over here. The word humility, as I think I mentioned before, comes from the Latin word humus,
dirt,
earth. Ground. To be humble is to be from the earth, you know, to be lowly, and not like in a involuntary sense, but to make yourself lowly, to not have airs.
Like Jesus says, take the lowest seat.
Right. That's what we have in the gospel, where Jesus says, don't go sit in. Having just recently been at a wedding, this one struck home because it's like, yeah, don't go to show up at a wedding and then sit in one of the places of honor so that the father of the bride or whatever has to come over and say, no, there's a more important person here. You're over there. Cause that embarrasses everybody.
Right.
You know? So I like that. So that's what some thoughts that I had about.
Of course, these days we just have assigned seating and you find your seat card and
right.
There's no confusion about where you are supposed to sit.
Right. Unless you have the same first and last name as both your dad and your nephew, like I do. There was some confusion at first.
Right.
At my nephew's wedding. Yeah. So that was kind of funny. All right, let's wrap things up there. We want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Dennis W., Stephen C., Charles S., Anthony W., and Caleb L. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. You'll find links from our discussion in our show notes at sqpn.com/bets. That's B-E-T-T-S. Send your feedback at our Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Send an email to bets@sqpn.com or visit our StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/Discord. Write a review at Apple Podcasts and share the podcast with your friends to help us grow our community and reach more listeners. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Emily Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest. Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, The Secrets of Star Wars. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/StarWars.